Higher Human Performance, episode 270. Welcome inside the Ellis Studio. My name is Randy Kentra, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. This is episode 270. Today we're going to talk about refusing help. Refusing help. You can find the show notes over the website, higherhumanperformance.com. Just plug in the number 270 up in the upper right-hand corner. Search this website. It will take you right there. There's a nice illustration of a photograph of a gentleman with a snarl on his face. He just does not look like a fella prone to receiving any help at all. I hope that's not you, but we'll talk about it next. As always, today's show is brought to you by, well, me, my company, Bula Network, LLC. Bula, B-U-L-A. Bula is a Fiji term, means both hello and goodbye. It's analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. Nope, not from Fiji. Never been to Fiji. I would like to go one day. Fell in love with the word about 35 years ago because it means life. In particular, it means life is good. And I thought it was a cool word. So it made sense that when I started a company, a boutique executive coaching and consulting company, I would name the company after that name, Bula. So Bula to you and to yours. It was years ago when I was first called coach. It was a group of kids playing hockey. I've had six-year-olds call me coach. I've had college guys do the same. It's a pretty good feeling, really. Knowing that you're helping players learn, you're helping them develop, you're helping them compete. But it's really, really cool to help players improve. And it's really cool to help them bond together as a group, as a team. Nothing beats the feeling of being part of a great team. A few years ago, when I began to morph my career away from roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty, kind of consulting, and I would describe that mostly as, oh, it could be all kinds of things. It could be sales funnel issues. It could be marketing issues. It could be sales issues. It could be compensation issues. It could be developing leaders, all kinds of things. But kind of those specific, dive in here and help us kind of do this and figure this out kind of things. I began to morph away from that to more of a boutique coaching where I specialize in helping executives become more effective leaders. And when that happened, I wasn't too sure of the labels. And I admit that I was a little bit jaded with all of the life coaching services. You know, I mean, every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there puts themselves out there as a life coach. And the notion that anybody with a business card could coach merely based on their ability to market themselves and be paid, it repulsed me, to be fair. It still does. But the fancy certifications by a lot of different outfits whose main goal is to collect more revenue, well, that repulsed me even more. And besides, my work violated every rule. In fact, it still does. It violates every rule of proper business model creation. And I'm a guy who's really, really fond of a great business model. Hey, come on. I'm in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, and we've got some of the best business models around, a.k.a. Southwest Airlines. I was and I still am a one-man band, and that is by design because for decades I have run larger operations with lots of employees and stuff and assets, and I wanted to rely solely on myself at this stage of my career. As a result, my business isn't scalable because I serve people in the most individualized, personalized, confidential way possible. And I dive into specific issues. I dive into specific challenges and constraints in work, in people's performance, in organizational cultures, in teams. And it really is just the opposite of the one-size-fits-all approach to coaching. It's the only way that I know how to roll, and I believe in it. In fact, I believe in it strongly, which is why I do it. People are unique. Circumstances are too. And so is work, cultures, teams. They're different. And there's that experience and that skill thing too. I mean, let's not forget that. The coaching that is given to a beginner in golf or any other endeavor, it's very different than the coaching that's going to be given to an elite player. I didn't coach six-year-old hockey players the same way that I coached college guys. Different skill set, different experience, different maturity, different understanding, different coaching required. And coaching provides one enormous opportunity for my clients, and that's perspective. It's never about me imposing my will on anybody. I used to tell hockey players, I can see things that you can't see. You're up close, and hockey really is a great series of kind of one-on-one battles. But you can see things away from the puck when you're a coach. And you do. You do see things. And you can help your team benefit from that perspective. It's no different in the world that I operate in every day professionally. Now, it's never about me imposing my will on somebody, but I do hope to influence people and I do hope to persuade people. Mostly, I want to try to persuade people of what's possible. And the goal is always the same, and it's the title of the podcast, Higher Human Performance. Not athletically, but organizationally, professionally. I want to help people elevate their performance and the performance within their organization or within their team because these are leaders. They are executives. And it's worth noting that the people who benefit the most from coaching are high achievers, or they are people that are desirous of becoming high achievers. Now, they do have one other ingredient, and this is a really important ingredient: willingness. A high degree of willingness. Once in a while, I'll encounter an executive or a leader, and they're the subject of my coaching. That is, their services or my services will have been employed by a superior, their boss, most notably, a sponsor. And so usually it's provided as a benefit, you know, a professional or personal development investment that an organization wants to make in this particular person. And yet, in spite of that motivation, I can sometimes run into the person who resists my services. They just simply refuse help. Now, to be fair here, it's pretty common for a person to have some reluctance about all this. Because it's a new experience for most people. Most people have not had professional coaching. And so they're reluctant. They're not sure what does this look like. And I fully expect that. And I have to go in and I have to establish trust and I have to convince them by my actions, not just my words, that I'm there to help, that I'm completely vested in their future and in their success. It's not always easy, but I give it a go. But occasionally, not very often, but occasionally I'll run into somebody that even after all of that, they just will not let me help them. And when it happened some years ago, one of the first times that I remember, at least, I took it personally. But, you know, experience has taught me that such people, they are resistant to help from almost everybody. And I won't say that they resist everybody, because I like to think that we've all got at least one person with whom we can kind of let our guard down and accept some counsel. That may not be true, but I would hope to think so. I would hope to think that the person who just flatly refuses my help, flatly refuses the help of their boss, flatly refuses the help of team members, I would hope that there's somebody in their life that they will accept some help from, but I could be wrong. knowing why I have been commissioned and knowing how badly the sponsor, usually the boss, wants me to serve this now reluctant executive, it's really frustrating. Really, really frustrating when I press and I press and I pull out all the stops to try to help a person only to be, well, only to be insincerely patronized by the client. You know, basically, they just put me off. But there is another aspect of my business model that isn't conducive for empire building. And not that I'm interested in building an empire, because I'm not. I'm just more interested in results than I am in embedding myself as a paid coach. And that ain't good. If your whole game is to build an empire, okay, then don't do what I'm doing. But I'm doing what I do because I want to. I'm one of those guys who, and if this offends you, then prepare to be offended. I'm one of those guys who think chiropractors serve a wonderful slot in healthcare. I have been to them before. But I'm also opposed to those chiropractors who are mostly interested in keeping you coming back week after week after week after for the rest of your life. And if I were a chiropractor, I'd be the guy trying to help you as quickly as possible so you could stop come seeing me. Now, that I know there is enormous business stupidity in that. But, you know, I'm just at that phase in my life, that point in my life where I can afford to harness the power of a stupid business model if I want to, just because that's how I prefer to go. And I freely admit this. I would not likely coach any client to follow my suit. I'm smarter than that because I know not everybody's where I'm at. I want to make a difference for my clients. Whenever I run into a reluctant client who behaves like the job candidate, you've seen them. If you're an executive, you've interviewed anybody at all, you've had the person who they answer every question with this patented good answer. I don't know about you. I don't often ask the really idiotic question. I like to think that I'm smarter than that, but I've seen many people and I've heard many people ask a really dumb question. In a job interview, it'll go something like, you know, after they've just gone through a glowing resume and just, it's just one hoorah story after another. And invariably the interviewer may ask something like, well, tell me about a failure. Tell me about a weakness. And you'll get that person that goes, well, you know, one of my big weaknesses is I just love people too much. Yeah. You've seen those kind of people. And when I encounter the reluctant client, the person that refuses help, too many times that's kind of the vibe. That's kind of how it goes. I sometimes will get that from people, and 100% of the time, they're the people who refuse my help because they're working really hard. They're working really hard to fool me. They're working really hard to put on a front that I know isn't true. They know it's not true, and I don't know. Maybe they think that they can just dupe the world. I don't know. Sometimes I can break through, and that's always the objective. I never do really judge a person's motive. I don't go into it believing that a person is evil and vile and trying to just be a chronic habitual liar. No, I know what it is. I know the motivation is to look good. The motivation is to appear competent. The motivations are all honorable. I get that. But I work to break through. And the person that really refuses help, you know, most of the time, those people, and frankly, they are fewer. And that's probably just the nature of the kind of clients that I work with, as much as it's anything. The ones that refuse help, they will maintain their guard as I walk out the door for the last time. You know, they're not going to give in. They're not going to give it up. And I've often thought about why people behave like that. But in every single case, I will report to the boss that I was unable to help the person because they wouldn't come clean. They wouldn't be honest. And you know what? Now this is, I don't know if this is ironic. I don't know. It used to It used to surprise me, but it doesn't anymore. When that happens, and again, this does not happen very often at all. And again, I think that's just due to the nature of the kind of clients that I attract and that are attracted to me. But when it does happen, and I go to the boss and I just tell him, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to be able to help somebody that just cannot shell it down and be honest. I've never had a boss be surprised. You heard it. I've never had a boss be surprised by that. Turns out that in every case, the boss that commissioned me, they commissioned me because A, they wanted to make an investment in this person, and B, they were experiencing some of the problems that I encountered. And they've told me almost 100% of the time, I won't say 100%, but as I'm thinking through this and as I prepared for today's show, I can't think of an exception. I'm not saying there hasn't been one, but I can't think of one. They were experiencing the same problems that I encountered, and unbeknownst to me when they commissioned me, they were really looking for somebody to confirm what they were seeing, and they wanted to make sure that they were getting it right. Now, I think they were hoping. I'm certain that they were hoping that I might be able to affect some improvement. And sadly, in a few of these cases, I could have, if only the person would have been able to accept some help. Refusing help is not limited to professionals like me, though. It's a much deeper problem for some people. They refuse help from their boss. They refuse help from their teammates. They refuse help from peers. Well, it doesn't look as overt as that. It's more passive. It'll be borne out in phrases like, "No, I'm good. I'm good. Thanks." When you offer to help. Or it'll be when you ask questions, if there are any problems or challenges that you might be able to help them with. "No, things are good. Things are great." Or it'll be, no problems here. Every refuser that I have encountered behaves in a similar fashion. They work hard. I've often told bosses, man alive, you know, if they worked as hard at getting things done as they do trying to hide, you might have something there. They work really hard to appear friendly and easygoing and having everything under control. Their power weapon is deception through charm. They want other people to think that they're unflappable, capable of handling any difficulty that might come their way. And unlike you and me, they've never encountered a challenge that left them wondering, well, what do I do now? Well, that's what they want you to think. I'm sure some social scientist, I'm sure there's some psychologist or psychiatrist somewhere that could have a field day trying to dissect such characters. In fact, I venture to guess they probably have. I haven't spent a lot of time fooling with it because you know what? I don't care. It's not my job and I'm not qualified for it because I'm just trying to help people elevate their own performance and the performance of their team or their organization. It's an impossible task when people refuse to acknowledge any room for improvement or that there's any problem, any difficulty, any challenge, any constraint. One of the first times that I encountered this was more years ago than I can remember now. I was helping a senior executive. He was an older gentleman, and he was trying to develop a younger executive, and he wanted to groom this young hotshot for some added responsibility. Now, unfortunately, he encountered some pushback from the younger guy, and he was finding that this younger leader was disagreeable with his ideas. In fact, he said to me, it's as though he thinks he's got to stand toe-to-toe with me. And that was how he felt. I'm beginning to wonder if I've made a poor choice in putting so much confidence in him. But he still had confidence in him. Good for him. And I was in between their ages. And so the senior executive, I think, was hoping that my experience and my demeanor, including my candor and my age, he was hoping that all of that would work to the benefit of this young protege. So I do what I did. I dug in, talking with them both together and then talking with them privately. And I spent as much time as possible with the younger leader trying to figure out why he might be behaving this way, especially toward a guy that really had his best interest at heart, and trying to figure out a way where I could help him. Well, now it was clear from the outset that he didn't want me to see any weakness. He didn't want me to see any challenge. He wanted me to see no constraints. He had everything, and I do mean everything, under control. He had all the best ideas. He knew better than his team. He knew better than his boss. He certainly knew better than me. Big rooms, small rooms, it did not matter. He was determined that he was going to appear to be the smartest man in every room he entered. And so I listened. I paid attention. I watched body language. I asked questions. I listened some more. My intuition kicked in, the INFJ that I am, Myers-Briggs. And it wasn't hard. He was a talker. You know, it's another trait I've seen in common with people who refuse help. Well, they tend to fill silence, or they just do the exact opposite. They just tend to create as much silence as possible. I mean, I've either found them to be really talkative or not talkative at all. I don't find people who refuse help, at least in my experience, I have not found them to be middle of the road kind of people. They either do lots of talking or they don't do much talking at all. Well, this guy, he was a talker. And I told him how much confidence his boss had him. And I was explaining to him that, you know, my presence proved it. I said to him what I say to every client: I'm here to serve you. And he gave what he thought would be all the right answers. You know, it was one of those, great, I'll put you to work. And he would launch into some specific work task as though I was going to be his personal assistant. And I would have to stop him and say, I'm not here to do your work for you. I'm not here to do it with you. I'm here to help you with much bigger issues. And that's when the, who's on first, that whole Abbott and Costello routine, that's when that would kick in. The art of deflection and all that, distraction, talking in just a whole bunch of circles, droning on and on and on and on. And I'd have to interrupt and try to get him back on point. And, you know, he was just determined he was going to continue to play this whole Abbott and Costello routine. And I would eventually just leave knowing that I'm not getting anywhere. I'm just not getting anywhere. Within months of my effort, my failed effort, I might add, he was gone. Ditched by that senior executive who thought so much of him and who saw so much potential, but could not get past the arrogance of a brash young leader with a very hard head. And I saw what he saw. The young man, he had extraordinary potential. It would have been easier if he would just have been a complete incompetent boob, but he wasn't. And through the years, I've seen that scenario repeated more often than I would like to admit. Nothing frustrates me more professionally than trying to help a person who would benefit from it, who could benefit from it, a person with skills and experience and know-how. And sometimes I'll encounter a person who is, you know, they're just over their head. Those people don't frustrate me. I mean, they frustrate their boss sometimes, but yeah, you know, the person that's just over their head, they just can't do it. They don't frustrate me. You know, they're often just doing the best they can, even though their best isn't good enough. Well, those situations just, they just have to play out. And you know how that goes. I mean, sooner or later, it comes to some kind of an ending. No, but it's those folks who could do so much better. They're the ones that make me sad. They're the ones that frustrate me. You know, it's a little bit, I was telling somebody just a week ago, it's like a drowning person who refuses a lifesaver, and all the while they're yelling at you to teach them to swim. It's like, grab the lifesaver, dude. Grab the lifesaver. Come on. You just want to coerce them to grab on. Just accept the help. But you're helpless to help. And yeah, it sucks. When Jack Welch was leading General Electric, I got an invitation from a friend at GE to attend a small gathering of people here in Dallas to a little meet and greet. Well, I was a huge Jack Welch fan, so I was honored to get the invite. And as Welch is making his way around this room, it's kind of standing up and finger food kind of stuff, and he's making his way around the room. And as he's getting closer to me, well, I had already been thinking about this thing, you know, in preparation for this meeting. I knew there was a question that I wanted to ask this man that I had read everything that could be written about the guy, every book, every article. I mean, I was pretty ate up with it. And my question was going to be, and it was, when he got to me, I did ask him this question. How did a guy like you get to the top of GE? Because I knew his roots. I knew his history. I mean, this is not the easiest guy in the world. This is a pretty demanding, hard-charging, take the bull by the horns, if not some other anatomy part, and do what you got to do. So there was my question to the great Jack Welch. How did a guy like you get to the top of GE? Well, he quit without batting an eye. He replied that he had a terrific boss who protected him and who fostered his best. And there it was. I mean, this is the man. This is Jack Welch. Wait a minute. What? He had a terrific boss who protected him and fostered his best. Welch accepted help. Yeah, the Jack Welch accepted help. And sometimes I can tell the person who's refusing my help, I can tell them that story. And sometimes they'll surrender. Sometimes they'll surrender and they'll let down their guard so I can begin to finally serve them. Most times they don't. No, most times they don't. Most times the person who's really dug in, by the time I get to that, I'm pulling out all the stops, you know, trying to make a connection. Now, most times they don't. Most times they're so dug in and committed to their posture that they just can't seem to find a way to be human. Because joining the rest of us is just not easy for them. And no matter what help we may have needed or what help we still may need, no matter that Jack Welch needed and accepted help, they just can't be like us. Mortal. Vulnerable. It's a mistake. It's a colossal, colossal mistake to avoid vulnerability that will enable us to accept help. It's a mistake for us to avoid seeking help. It's one thing to refuse help. It's something different to seek it. And the people who refuse it, well, they're surely not seeking it. And it's also the telltale sign of a low performer. I want you to think about this. Who cares if it's insecurity? Who cares if it's ego? Who cares if it's pride or anything else? I don't. I don't much care. In fact, I don't care at all. I used to, but I've learned not to fret so much about it because the people who refuse help are mostly, not always and not entirely, but mostly, they are mostly not the people most capable of high performance. And that's because the highest performers are the most willing to do what must be done to elevate their performance. And that's the biggest ingredient of success. And I said it before, willingness. Now, I'm not diminishing skills. I'm not diminishing talent. I'm not diminishing experience. But without a high degree of willingness, those are just potentials. And I don't know how to win with potential. I don't know how to achieve anything with potential. Because potential is just hope, and hope won't win anything. Hope needs action to become reality. Just today on the radio, on the sports radio station here in Dallas, I was listening to a news report about a second-round Major League Baseball draft pick for the Texas Rangers, signed a $2 million signing bonus. He's a high school kid from North Carolina. And then there was a third-round pick that they made for a college kid from Duke. Yep. He got a $2 million signing bonus too. $4 million paid to two players, a high schooler and a college kid. And they've got potential, but they have yet to play a single inning of Major League Baseball. I don't know if they'll pan out or not. I really don't think the Texas Rangers know either. Not for sure. I mean, they've got good intel on these guys. Come on, they're not dummies. They've done their homework. They are making a calculated investment, but right now they're just paying for the potential of these two guys. Time will tell if that potential is going to be realized. And I know this, if both players put in the work, if both of them stay healthy, if both of them perform up to their ability, yeah, that means if they're good teammates and if they listen to coaching and if they do what they're told, the investment, it'll pay off. But I also know this, if they party like foolish frat brats and they're not willing to do the work and they're not willing to be responsible and they're not willing to behave like professionals and do what's required to succeed at the major league level, well, I know this, they won't get to the major league level. They'll languish in minor leagues or they'll bust completely. You, me, listen, we're not likely to get a $2 million bonus based on potential. I mean, come on, let's face it. Professional sports and entertainment, these are fantastical arenas. The rest of us, we live in the real world where the value proposition is very, very different. You were hired based on what you could do or what your employer was led to believe you could do. You were likely promoted based on what you had done or what was expected that you would do based on historical performances. Well, okay. That doesn't really sound unlike Major League Baseball, does it? Well, here's the big part. Except for that $2 million signing bonus. Yeah, you didn't get that. You, Major League Baseball players, entertainers, anybody else, that willingness is still the common denominator to high achievement. And accepting or asking for help is part of it. It's just part of it. It's an ingredient that's necessary for high performance. There aren't any self-made men. There aren't any self-made women. Everybody owes somebody for helping them along the way. I don't care who it is. I don't care. It's parents, teachers, coaches, trainers, advisors, managers, attorneys, accountants, trusted friends. So what does all this mean? It means if you want to commit yourself to mediocrity, if you want to commit yourself to failure, refuse help. Go it alone. Yeah, dig in. Go it alone. See how far that gets you. Go ahead, try it. Because the high achievers are going to benefit by you not being part of the competition because you're not even going to be in the game. You'll just be one less person standing in their way of reaching their dreams because you're trying to go it alone. And they're getting help everywhere they can get it. So, like the photograph that illustrates today's post over the website, higherhumanperformance.com, episode 270. Yeah, go look at that photograph. Maybe that's you. Keep that scowl on your face. Embrace your misery as the smartest man in the room who never reached the heights of your higher human performance. No, on second thought, don't do that. I don't want you to do that. Come on. We are here to help. That's the point of the podcast. Free of charge. No strings attached. Just subscribe to iTunes. Subscribe through a non-iTunes feed. Go to Stitcher. We're here to help. I would encourage you to visit the website if you want to find out more about me and my company, Bula Network, LLC. Network, by the way, doesn't mean a podcast network. That was never the intent. Some people, because of all my podcasting, think that that was kind of the thing. No, network in the sense of it was just a variety of different services. But Bula Network is a boutique executive coaching and consulting firm. You can click on the About page and read all about me. There's a tab labeled Who I Work With. Work with a lot of different kinds of people, all different kinds of ways to connect with me, find out more about me. I would encourage you to go back, listen to some of the archives if you care to. I'd love it if you would subscribe to the podcast. And if you're so disposed, leave me a review over at iTunes. If you go to the bottom of the post, actually almost any post, you can click on a link there and it'll take you straight there. Kind of makes it easier to do. It's not the most simple thing in the world to do, to leave a review over at iTunes, but I would love it if you would do that. Again, my name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, where, in fact, we are, whatever this tropical storm is that has landed on shore in South Texas, it's headed our way. With all of the flooding that we have had this spring, we are now expecting 6 to 10 inches of rain in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, as I hit the record button on June the 16th, 2015. So let's hope for the best. Hope we don't all float away. The drought has ended. There's the news flash. I hope you're not experiencing a drought in your career. I hope things are going well for you. If there's anything that I can do to be of service, hey, holler at me at Twitter. Any other way that you choose to. Coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, from a room that's painted yellow that many years ago I named the Yellow Studio. Thanks for listening.